how close to a trade deal with China are we? Depends on who you ask. In New York, I'm Tracy Samuelson in for David Brancaccio. We heard some conflicting messages about the state of U.S.-China trade negotiations out of the White House this week. Early on, it was President Trump saying, "We're very, very close to a deal." By midweek, United States Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer said there's still lots of work to do, that it's not when we get a deal, but if. Then back to optimism yesterday, with White House Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow telling CNBC that progress has been terrific. The two sides are on the cusp of a historic agreement. Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial in New York, is here to discuss. So, Chris, how did markets digest these varying narratives?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because what seems to be happening is that every time the White House reports success in negotiations, that there's really very little movement in the markets. It's not until or unless the success is repeated by the official Chinese news agency Xinhua that the market actually moves. And it's, I think, important that traders are essentially, they're waiting for validation that, anything that's been agreed is actually agreed by both parties.
Interesting. And so notes of caution earlier this week, same thing. It didn't move markets much?
Well, it didn't in part because, you know, there hasn't been any explosive rally, not yet. Nothing that I think you will see if and when a deal is actually signed and done. To me, it suggests that traders are going to wait until this thing is done before they actually react to it.
All right, Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Tracy.
In just a few minutes, the University of Michigan will release final consumer sentiment numbers for February. This is data that tells us how the U.S. consumer is feeling about the economy. After a dip in confidence in January, the preliminary report out a couple weeks ago indicated an uptick, thanks in part to the end of the government shutdown, as Marketplace's Andy Euler explains.
One reason consumers are feeling confident?
Inflation seems to be softening.
That's David Schick with Consumer Edge Research. He says long-term inflation expectations in the survey have fallen to their lowest level in the past half century.
If you look at building materials, if you look at energy prices, some of the precursors to inflation are falling, and the aggregate inflation numbers just don't look as worrying as they were, or as inflationary, I should say, as they were 6 or 12 months ago.
Another reason people are feeling good is that they see their job prospects and income expectations as the best since the early 2000s. David Duhl's an economist at IHS Market.
So consumers with their jobs and their incomes, their pocketbook concerns, are not really listening to economists out there who are predicting doom and gloom and recessions in the next year.
But the housing market is softening and wages aren't rising as much as some economists had hoped. This is also a slow time for spending after the holidays and before summer. So if anything bad happens, like a natural disaster, it could have a disproportionate effect on sentiment. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Not everyone gets a chance to study the economy in school. Anyway, who doesn't need a brush up? Marketplace helps you continue your education in a way that we hope is smart, accessible, and hopefully even a bit fun. Your donation is not only an investment in your own learning, but also in helping us make more people smart about the economy. And that, we think, is good for everyone. To learn how you can help, visit marketplace.org/investors. Thank you.
Tesla announced yesterday the long-awaited $35,000 model of its Model 3 electric car is now finally available for order. Previously, only premium versions of what's supposed to be a mass-market car have been available at a much higher price. Marketplace's transportation reporter Jack Stewart has more.
Tesla's really struggled through what Elon Musk calls production hell to get its factory in Fremont, California, churning out Model 3s at the rate that he wants. It reported a profit for the last two quarters, but prior to that, it burnt through cash as it built out production lines. And critics have questioned whether the company can ever make that promised, cheaper Model 3 and still make money. So Tesla will be hoping to silence them with the launch of the standard range car with a battery good for 220 miles between charges. Until now, the company's only sold premium versions of the car with a bigger battery that cost $50,000 to $70,000, but which also meant a higher profit margin. Tesla's making another cutback. It's closing most of its retail stores. The company's always sold direct to consumers rather than through franchise dealerships, but now it's going online only. It wouldn't say how many job losses that would mean, but it will definitely make it harder to take a test drive. But Elon Musk says you can order a car in 1 minute on your phone and then have 7 days to try it out and return it.
Marketplace's Jack Stewart. BP is out with its annual energy forecast, looking at what factors and forces might affect energy demand as we look to 2040. Things like policy, economic growth, and globalization. Also, how energy demand will be met by a mix of sources: oil, gas, coal, and increasingly renewables. Spencer Dale is BP's chief economist. Hi, Spencer.
Hi.
So you've done this big forecast. You have a couple of different scenarios here. Let's start with what's basically the status quo. Assuming conditions continue in a similar way to what they are right now, what do you expect in terms of energy demand, energy usage?
Energy demand grows by around 30%. So the world needs about a third more energy by 2040. The key thing here is energy demand in rich countries, they don't need more energy. All of that growth is coming from the developing world. Something like 2.5 billion people, that's more than a third of the world's population, moving from low incomes to middle incomes over the next 20 years. As they do, they have access to electricity, they can start to think about buying their own motor car, and that's what drives energy demand.
So that's a substantial increase. What about in your other scenarios?
In other scenarios, particularly, no, one point of that business as usual, if you like, scenario is carbon emissions continue to rise. If we want to get on a pathway consistent with meeting those Paris climate goals, they need to fall very dramatically. One way in which you can stop carbon emissions from rising and start to fall is make big gains in energy efficiency. So in that scenario, energy demand grows by 20% rather than 30%.
One of the other scenarios you looked at is what happens if the world requires a lot less plastic than we do currently, because oil is a big component of plastics.
The biggest driver of oil demand growth over the next 20 years is likely to be oil as a feedstock going into petrochemicals, particularly making plastics. The world is becoming increasingly concerned about the environmental implications of plastics, particularly single-use plastics, plastic bags, straws, cups. And so we say, suppose the world were to do a worldwide ban on single-use plastics, and it would reduce the growth of oil demand by 5 or 6 million barrels a day.
So even under your more typical scenario, your kind of baseline scenario, you think that oil use will peak in about 10 years?
So the biggest driver of oil demand growth over the last 20, 30 years, 40 years, has been transport demand. We expect the number of passenger car kilometres to sort of almost double over the next 20 years, but the amount of oil needed to power those cars to be almost unchanged because cars are getting more efficient. But yes, we're getting to a world where at some point in the next 10, 20, 30 years, oil demand is likely to stop growing and gradually plateau.
Spencer Dale, chief economist at BP, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And finally, New York is saying, baby, come back to Amazon. There's a full-page ad in the New York Times today from a bunch of local businesses and union leaders urging Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos to reconsider its scuttled plans for an office in New York. It promises Governor Cuomo will take personal responsibility for state approvals and says that bruising public debate after Amazon's selection of New York, consider it part of the city's charm. I'm Tracy Samuelson with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.